The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the ninth tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the ninth tradition is Kaylin.
Hello, I'm Kaylin, and I'm an alcoholic. So thanks, Jane, for asking me to speak on a tradition. It's an honor, a privilege, and a challenge, because I have a little bit of an imposter syndrome up here, because I know there's so many people in here who are so deeply embedded in service, whether it's to this home group or, you know, service below the group level. And so kind of what I've come to peace with is I will share my experience with the ninth tradition with you, as opposed to what maybe a former delegate might have to say, or someone who's been around for a really long time and has done every service position imaginable. So I know we did just read the traditions, but tradition 9 is AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. As the short form. Then I will read the long form because it does unpack a little bit, because to me, the ninth tradition seems a little bit like an oxymoron, especially when you see what goes on at a meeting like this, right? It seems incredibly organized. Like, how can it not be organized? But here's the long form. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group, its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area, their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derived no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. So when I got sober, the first thing my sponsor recommended to me, like with 2 days, I didn't know my behind from my elbow. She said, great, so what are your service commitments? I was like, what? So she took me to AG, and I saw the Tuesday night meeting, and I was really overwhelmed, honestly. I signed up for a service commitment. I helped put away the chairs at the end of the meeting. Then the following year, I helped with tables. Then I bought all of the cups and tablecloths for the Duke Room. And now this year, I get to be the coffee chair in the Duke Room. And I mean, our service is so specific, right? Like, we have a commitment on coffee crew that's like slop bucket monitor from 6:15 to 6:30. And to me, that's like, whoa, that is crazy organized. How can you tell me that this is not organized? And Bill kind of discusses this in a letter that he wrote to the Grapevine. It's in a book called Language of the Heart, if you want to read it. It's very interesting and kind of explores what happened to AA as it got bigger and bigger. And we realized that in order to really carry the message and make 12-step work possible, we need structure. But structure is not organization. So he suggested, some may still ask, are we nevertheless moving away from our early tradition that AA as such ought never be organized? Not a bit of it. We shall never be organized until we create a government, until we say who shall be members and who shall not, until we authorize our boards and service committees to mete out penalties for nonconformity, for non-payment of money, and for misbehavior. I know that every AA heart shares in the conviction that none of these things can ever happen, We merely organize our principles so that they can be better understood. And we continue so to organize our services that AA's lifeblood can be transfused into those who must otherwise die. That is all in all of AA's organization. There can never be any more than this. So at my job, actually, it was sad. We had to fire a woman today who she never showed up. She, thank you very much. She would sometimes come and then leave for like an hour and just didn't follow the general rules of like what you do as an employee. And it was uncomfortable because I liked her a lot and it had to happen. But in AA, if someone on my coffee crew doesn't come, I'm not like, this is your first written warning. And, you know, two warnings later and you're out of AA. You're never coming back, honey. Like, no. Like, that doesn't work. That doesn't work because AAs are stubborn. We're a very stubborn people. And we can't be disciplined that way. In Tradition 9, it talks about great love and great suffering are AA's disciplinarians. And so I can't make you do the 12 steps. I can't. In fact, you don't have to do them. But if you don't, you might suffer a lot, and you might go out and drink. And that's not because of anything I did. That's because an AA wasn't aligned with the spiritual principles of this program. So, in fact, I'm working with a woman right now who doesn't want to call me her sponsor. She calls me her recovery coach. And, that's fine, right? Semantics. I feel like I should be getting paid, like, $500 an hour somewhere on the West Coast. But, you know, like, I can't make her do anything. Like, I can't make her call me every day. I can't make anyone in this room do anything that they don't want to do. I can't kick you out. Because end of the day, this is home. This is home, and it needs to be home, and it needs to be here for any sick and suffering alcoholic. I know that with a lot of groups, the spirit of rotation is incredibly important. I currently am serving as a general service representative for another group, and it has taught me so much about the structure of AA. It's bananas. It's it is so crazy structured, and because of that, I get to be part of a committee, like a district committee meeting on the Lower East Side, and I get to talk to our delegate and get to connect with other AAs who are there to serve their group. Because as a GSR, I don't get to come back to that group and tell them what to do because I heard this from General Service. Like, we have to do this and this. Because everything is just suggestion. I'm there to support the group. It's been a real gift, honestly, because I couldn't even show up for myself when I came in here. And service has taught me that, like, my life can be absolutely full and rich as long as I'm doing it to serve and not so that I can be bossy, as fun as that can be. But it has no place here. Let's see what else. Yeah, so government has no place in AA. Even if a group is super desperate to find a solution for an issue they may be having and writes to the General Service Office or the General Service Board and says, help us, you have to tell us what to do. We're at each other's throats. Here are our issues, X, Y, Z. When they get their response, it's not going to be like, okay, here's what you're going to do. No. General Service will say, well, you can do whatever you want, but we've found with our experience that XYZ tends to be helpful, but it's up to you. You're autonomous. Because end of the day, any group, any structure within AA is there to keep the doors open to the newcomer so that they have a place to recover. And that's what it's about. That's all AA is about, is being able to carry the message. So it can be a little tricky not to get swept up in how crazy structured it can be depending on the group or depending on the various, like, organization, you know, below the group level that you may come into contact with. But end of the day, whether you're an area delegate or you're, you know, counting days, thank you so much. We're just here to help the next sick drunk, and we just need ways to make that happen. Anything that keeps the doors open is going to be a beautiful, beautiful thing for the future of AA. So thank you so much for letting me speak.
Our next 10-minute speaker is Apollo.
Hi, everyone. My name is Apollo, and I'm an alcoholic. I am very nervous. Probably should get that out of the way. Speaking to the microphone. First of my stats, my recovery date is April 25th, 2016. I have a sponsor. I've worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm currently on 9, 10, 11, and 12. And I don't have sponsees, but I do have service commitments, even though I missed mine today, as the previous speaker was speaking about that, I realized that. So I'm going by Apollo because I'm transitioning, and I realize that I've been coming to these rooms, for specifically this room, for about 7.5 years now. And for anybody who's confused, who's known me as Hoden for the last 6.5 years, I apologize, but not really. With that said, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born in East Africa in a refugee camp. I don't remember anything before that. My first 11 years of formation were in a refugee camp. Then I moved to Minnesota with 16 family members, or 16 kids, which I'm the youngest of. And that doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is that my 15 siblings and everyone else, and my nieces and nephews, and I have a lot of those, seem to know how to function in reality, in life. I lived in a different world. Whether it was the camp, whether it was Minnesota, I always lived in a different sort of my own little world. And the only thing that made it function is whatever altered my mind. And at first, it was dry goods, then it was alcohol, and alcohol was always littered in there somewhere. And when I was 18, I had an incident with I had an incident with my family where my older sisters found out I was gay or I liked girls. Clearly, I'm a guy, so that doesn't just. No, I'm kidding. Being that my family is conservative Muslim, I was given a choice. I was told to either leave house or get married. I said, okay, see you later, bye. And the thing is, when I said that, it wasn't because I was afraid of getting married. It was because I knew that getting married meant that someone would be responsible for me, and that would get in the way of my drinking. I could have stayed home, gotten married, went to college. I had a full-ride scholarship to an engineering program at the University of Minnesota. But I was like, but that interferes with my drinking. So I'm going to buy a one-way ticket to New York. I'm going to be homeless in New York City. And that is a great solution. Because at least I get to drink the way I want. And this time I don't have to hide it because I don't have to deal with them. So came to New York, ended up in a homeless shelter. I met my adopted dad and his wife there. They were volunteering there. They took me in. And in the first year of living with my dad, who was a drinker, and working with him for him and his wife, they realized I had a really bad drinking habit. And mind you, this guy is German, drinks like beer like it's water, and he's telling me I have a problem. And I was like, are you sure about that? Anyway, long story short is, he tried to take me to my first meeting when I was 21, and I remember it was the 79th Street workshop, and I walked in and I said, looks like a bunch of crazies, not for me. Walked right back out. But in the back of my head, I always knew that alcohol was going to get me into trouble. Everything I touched fell apart because I would get a great job. I would not drink for a month. I'd like white knuckle it. And as soon as I started the job, I would get fired within 30 days because I would start drinking. Sometimes I would drink to the point where I would fail out of school. And the funny thing is, I've had a lot of opportunities afforded to me, mainly because I'm super charming, in case you haven't figured that out yet. And I would apply, like, I remember I applied to NYU Tisch program, and they said, your grades suck. And I said, yeah, I know, but, you know, I'm a great writer. So I submitted one of my screenplays, and they were like, oh, this is good. Okay, we'll give you a probationary admission. Thank you. Admission. And they did that, and I followed it with drinking right before orientation. And I drank for a whole week, missed orientation, first day of class, second day of, never made it to class. And that is what my drinking looks like, right? That's how it's always gone. But in 2012, this magical thing happened where I ended up in the hospital from alcohol poisoning, which dry goods helped me drink more, and then I really had a really bad convulsions and stuff like that. The therapist said that I had to go to AA when I got out, and my dad had stayed sober for 2 weeks while I was in the psych ward and brought me to my first meeting, which was the Monday night women's meeting. And I met a sponsor there who brought me to this meeting, but I didn't want to come that day, so my dad ended up coming with me. The irony of that is he got sober, and 7.5 years sober from that. I had to go out and do more research and development. I've discovered a few things, such as alcohol just does not agree with me, and that's the end of it. Long story short, I did have a few relapses, and I wouldn't call them relapses because I was using AA as a drying dock to get out of trouble. When I finally did come back in 2016, it wasn't because I was trying to get out of any trouble. It was because I was just hopelessly and pitifully, just completely emotionally bankrupt, more or less, you know, I didn't know where my life was going. I didn't know how I got to where I was. I mean, I kind of did, but I didn't want to admit it. And finally, alcohol had me down for the count. And I came back into the rooms with my tail between my legs. And since then, I haven't left. A day at a time, I am calling my sponsor. And this time around, when I did the first step, something happened, which was that I could no longer I could no longer halfway say that I was powerless and, you know, over alcohol and all that. I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I felt it. It had me defeated. I was completely, completely lost, and I couldn't stop on my own. Even if I did for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, it didn't matter. I was going to go back to it. So I threw myself into the program, and I got a service commitment. And I had this morning meeting where I went to for 9 months, 6 days a week. And it was for the first time in my life, I felt free. I felt like I could do and show up and be the person I wanted to be. I wasn't a flake. I wasn't, you know, lost to the world. And I wasn't trying to hide either. I think I can stand up straight today, talk, and not try to figure out how much non-bull I'm going to tell you. Mainly because, like, I know that I don't have to lie today. Everyone here has gone through the ringer like I did. And I don't have to bull you, and you don't have to bull me. That's we're going to leave the other part of that word out because Peggy's staring at me. So, long story short, I did my fourth step a year and a half after I was sober because I'm stubborn, like it's been said. I'm extremely stubborn, and I remember my sponsor constantly telling me, do your fifth step, and I remember saying, one day with my therapist. And then I got into a relationship that didn't fix me. Thank you. I got jobs, schools, that didn't fix me. And I didn't feel free until I did my fifth step. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you the magic is in the fifth step. But that's my time. Thank you for letting me share.
Our main speaker tonight is Karen.
Hey, family. My name is Karen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 6, 1989. I have a home group It's a Journey to Freedom group in Livingston, New Jersey. We meet on Wednesday nights. We're a big book study group. So anytime you're out in New Jersey, if you're ever in New Jersey across the bridge, you're welcome to join us. It's an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The microphone deal, right? Speaking to the microphone a little bit better. Can you hear me okay? All right. So I am really excited to be here. Thank you so much, Jane, for inviting me and coming to share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I was thinking when we were driving here, I hate driving east. I really do. I hate going over the river and into the confusion of New York. I get very overwhelmed with the crowds. Always been that way. A little bit about me. I was raised in Wisconsin, right along Lake Michigan, you know, so it's a little bit different. And I moved out here when I was a senior in high school, and, you know, I found my people, so to speak. Anyway, so I want to talk to you tonight. First, I want to say congratulations to all the people who are brand new here. Thank God you've come in. And I really hope you're on fire for your recovery. Are you on fire for your recovery? And if you're not, I hope when you leave here, you'll consider that. I am so excited to be sober and alive today, because it wasn't like that a long time ago. You know, I want to talk to you about the love story of Alcoholics Anonymous and a person like myself. You know, I have my big book. I love this thing. And, it is a story between a God, as we understand God, and a person like me, who came here at a time when I didn't think there was anything left for me to do. You know, I grew up in alcoholism. I was very familiar with drinking all around the clock, you know. I'm the oldest of seven kids. I have a twin brother. My parents were drunks. And sobriety just wasn't a topic. Sobriety, in fact, was like the exit sign, you know. I couldn't really relate to that. I thought sober people were boring people, right? I had an idea of what life would be like sober, and it just isn't too appealing to a person like me, you know? And we drank all the time, and we were never stopped. There were too many of us. Parents didn't really pay attention, so we kind of ran the show. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent. And we're real close in age, so, you know, we moved around a lot when I was growing up, and I was in 8 grammar schools and 4 high schools, and they tried to have somewhat of control around us, but that really didn't work. And in that geographic relocation, that's an AA term you learn here, like blackout, that's a term you learn here. I didn't realize that we were fleeing things. I knew we were hiding. You know, I lived in a home that was abuse inside out. And, you know, we had that door that nothing went out the front door. It stayed behind that door. And so I learned to keep the secret. So I became the chameleon. I'd be whoever you wanted me to be when you wanted me to be it. And that's how I learned how to get along. You know, we used female ways in order to get what we need. And I did that very well. Perfected it really well, as a matter of fact. Drinking was always behind the scenes. Played with the dry goods, but my choice was alcohol. And I found alcohol let me fit in. I found that when I drank, I could participate. So alcohol was absolutely my solution. Didn't have that terminology then, but I just knew when I drank, I could deal. Because without alcohol, I didn't have any dealage. You know what I mean? There's no dealage. So, you know, that's kind of like what we did. I moved out here. You know, I'm an A-type personality, if you probably didn't guess that. You know, very much in control of everything. You know, I had to be the top of the class, the top of this, the top of that, the top of this. And if I wasn't, you know, that idea would run in my head that I'm not worth anything. So it was either you are everything or you are nothing. Little did I know that's a deal we got with God. Am I everything or am I nothing? And I had that without God. I'm everything or I'm nothing. And that kind of like followed me around. You know, I chased that. You know, I kind of met this guy. You know how relationships work. You know, my knight in shining armor who was just like me. And we had the house. In fact, he worked here in the city. He was on Wall Street. And, you know, we made a lot of money, did a lot of things, and I had 3 children. I still have 3 children. You know, and alcohol kind of ruled that relationship, alcohol and other things. And He came home one day and he just said, I had enough of you. You know, I'd go more into that detail, but, you know, 30 minutes goes by really fast. And I really have to tell you, for me, why I stand here with almost 30 years sober and just absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous and the life it's given me. Because I can't believe I could pinch myself. And if you don't believe that you can have that, I'm telling you, you can. So he left. He was in and out of that relationship for many, many years, and it took me a long time to let go of that addiction. I didn't realize I was addicted to the attention. I was addicted to the sex. I was just addicted to another human being, not a higher power. So it took me a while. You know, I was a mess when he walked out and, you know, found that alcohol soothed that. And I just went on this binge, 9-month binge. And I had 3 little kids at the time. And I found myself going down Route 80 out in Western Jersey. I was visiting my twin brother, and I was going down an exit ramp, and there was a truck. And then suddenly I was home, and I don't know how I got there. Like, I had some inkling that alcohol was causing a few problems. You know, by this time, my dad had left my mom. She tried to kill herself, and he moved in with her best friend. You know, typical stuff that happens in our lives, right? Like, we laugh at it. The normal people would go, oh, my God. We would be aghast. And they moved back to the towns that I grew up in and try to live this secret life. But anyway, so he had entered Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been to a couple of Al-Anon meetings, and I had been to a couple of adult children meetings, and you guys are really sick. That wasn't me, right? And I just really couldn't see what you had in store for me then. But the seed's planted when you enter a room like that, because you're desperate enough to know that something's not right. You know, there's a line in our book, and, you know, it goes, deep in the heart of every man, woman, and child is the desire to know God. And I didn't know that God was that higher spirit that I always sought. But I sought it in men. I sought it in money. I sought it in sex. I sought it in stuff. I didn't realize that it was here right along, you know, that hole in the soul deal. I didn't know I had access to that. I had no idea. Because alcohol fed me till it didn't. Those things worked till they didn't. And then there's that one day, you know, and my husband's showing up to pick up my children. They were 11, 8, and 4 at the time. And he's showing up, and my kids sat on those steps for 7 hours before he showed up. And they're blaming me for kicking him out. They're blaming me for pushing him away. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, they don't know the truth. But it was me. Today I can tell you that. But I couldn't see it then. Okay, so they leave, I get drunk. You know, that's the only thing to do. You know, what do we do next? That's what we do next. And there are other things I was doing at the same time. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about this counselor who said to me, so how much do you drink? And I went, oh, how much should I drink? 3. How much you drink? Oh, about a little bit. And I was lying, and I knew I was lying, and she knew I was lying, but I didn't know she knew that I was lying. And she suggested that I might want to consider, right? I might want to consider getting some help for my drinking. And I was like, I don't know about you, but no one called me out on my drinking. I was unapproachable. I was one of those unapproachable kind of people. Because I would look at you, and I'd just leave. Excuse me, well, I'm gone. I didn't argue. I still don't argue. I didn't argue. I didn't prove my point. I didn't have to do anything. You know, my truth was that, oh, well, you don't get it. And I left. I'll go find somebody else. And that's how I kind of ran my life. So I thought about what she said when he finally showed up, because I reached that place that we reach. And I reached that jumping off place that I didn't know how to live with alcohol. I didn't know how to live without alcohol. I'd been hiding alcohol from myself. I couldn't stop drinking. I'd make a deal like this. Okay, so I really screwed up last night. I'm meeting my kids at the bus stop with alcohol and a Dunkin' Donuts cup. I can't stay sober. I can't. I'm trying, and I just don't get. What's the problem with me? Why can't I do this? I'm smart. I'm educated. What is this? I couldn't figure it out, and I'm sitting at that table, and he took them, and it was Labor Day weekend, and So I called our detox near my house, And they suggested that I might want to come on in. And I said, you know what I said. I don't think that's a very good idea. The neighbors will know. Well, they would have had a party. But, you know, because my drinking as a drunk woman in 1989 was not a very acceptable behavior. My kids weren't allowed to have friends over. I wasn't invited anywhere. You know, so it was just a very sad place to be. And I had done enough drunk dialing that none of my family would have me. You know, I had no friends left. I'd used them all up, is basically what had happened. I used everyone up. So I decided I couldn't go visit that lady who answered the phone. It had been a long time since someone answered the phone. So I went down to see her, and she came downstairs, and she hands me a meeting book of Alcoholics Anonymous in our area. And she said, okay, so if you don't want to come in here, perhaps you want to go there. And she circled some meetings in my area. And she said, why don't you just go check it out? So I did. The next day, I went to a meeting in our area. It's this place called Union Hill. We don't really have clubhouses where I live in North Jersey. We have meeting houses. This made a lot of meetings there. So I went there, and I was watching you all walk in. And I was like, they don't look like anything that I feel. And I bopped by that door, and there's a guy standing by the door. And I walked up to him, and he said, welcome home. And I just started to cry. Okay, so as a kid, you know, growing up in this abuse that I grew up in, I would go to church, a church like this. I would go to church and I'd walk in because he couldn't touch me there. And I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and I had that same feeling, couldn't touch me there. And that divine energy that comes into a room when we all gather because we're here for one purpose and one purpose only was the same feeling I had when I was a kid. The same feeling I drank over, same feeling I used over, same feeling I hunted for. This feeling of being safe and protected was right there in that meeting room in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were reading from the grapevine, and they were reading an article about God as you understand God. And I vaguely remember it. I was fortunate to find that issue in our area convention a couple years ago in the grapevine room in a box. And it is kind of like I remembered it, but it talked about a power. It talked about a power outside of me who would take me to a place that I could believe I could go if I would just do these simple things. I was like, I have no idea what that is, but I sure like this feeling. That greeter, you guys have them here. It was so cool to be welcomed by an army of greeters. So if you are new here and you had that experience, that doesn't happen everywhere, but this is a three legacy group, and thank God it happens here, right? Thank goodness for stuff like that. And it happened for me, and it happened for me a lot. And I started to look at the people around the room. And in that energy that happened when I walked in that room, it happens in every AA meeting I go to. And there I found the spark. The obsession to drink was lifted from me. I couldn't believe it. The next day it was like, I think I'll go back there. I went back there, and the days turned into weeks, and the weeks turned into months. And suddenly I found myself not drinking. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't had a sober breath since I can remember. I couldn't. I either drank or used something else in order not to feel, because it's the only way that I could fit in. So I began to really understand something, that alcohol was at the root of this. It took me a little while, right? I was fortunate that in the meeting that I went to, there was a pocket of enthusiasm. In 1989, the big book wasn't really a deal. We had feeling meetings, you know, we had group, and we had discussion, and it was a lot about your adult child and all that kind of stuff. But in this particular meeting, God saw fit to put a person like me in a meeting of direction and guidance, and these women were in a pocket of enthusiasm of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was 3 weeks sober, and they were having Joe and Charlie at a local hotel, and they took me there. And first of all, I was kind of confused. You talk in a lingo in AA that no one else talks, so you don't understand anybody. You don't know what they mean. So I was just following the spirit they talk about in this magnificent book. I'm following the spirit. I'm following the safe and protected. I didn't get it yet. And I'm walking around and I'm following them and I go to this hotel and everyone's got their big books and their highlighters and their, all their stuff. And I felt the energy, so I stayed. And I'm just watching the enthusiasm grow and I'm like, I want that. I want to be able to be enthusiastic about something. Something. I want my kids to like me again. I don't want to lose my groceries anymore. I don't want to lose my car. I want to show up for my job. I don't want to have flat tires. I'm in trouble all the time, and it's always when I'm drinking. But I'm not drinking. I couldn't believe it. And little by little, it started to get together. It started to pull together, and I told my... Now he's an ex-husband. He wasn't at the time because I was terrified Dyfus was going to come in as child services in New Jersey and take them away from me. Bottom line, he didn't want them anyway, so I probably wouldn't have had that problem. He didn't want anything to do with them. It was me who wanted those kids, and it's me who raised those kids. And stuff started to happen. I went to that big book study, and then I heard somebody saying, you know what, you're going to hear somebody tell your story from the podium, and you're going to be amazed because you're going to listen to what they have to say, and guess what? You're going to see the hope in her story. And sure enough, at that convention in September, at the end of September is our area convention, I heard this woman, Beth, speak, and oh my God, she told my story. She told about the loneliness. She talked about those four horsemen. She talked about the time and what she did with her kids. I finally could face up to the fact that I abused those kids. My alcoholism spoke like this. Oh, you're in trouble last night? We're not going to drink today. Okay, we say. 11:30 comes around. That's a bad idea. I couldn't ever figure out how that logic ever worked. But it did, because alcoholism demands that. It demands you take a drink. Then it requests the second. And then you are gone. And that's how it was, but I didn't know that had anything to do with alcoholism. I learned that from you. So little by little, I meet the first woman who is to be my sponsor. And it's not like here. They don't assign you people. They don't tell you anything. No one really came up to me, because I'll remind you, I was very unapproachable. Because if you looked at me cross-eyed, I was out the door. You know, I hadn't lost that behavior yet. So the women I sponsor, I keep reminding them I was really defiant and I was really unapproachable, so I get it. You know, so I met this woman and she laughed. She had a laugh that I really didn't know how to do. I don't know about you, but the way I grew up, you couldn't laugh too loud and you couldn't cry too loud. You were always like doing something wrong. Something's not right here. And she really laughed, and she laughed a laugh that I didn't know how to laugh. And I'm watching her and I'm watching this group of people around her, and they told me she was sponsoring too many people, so she'd probably say no. So of course I asked her, and she said yes, and she said, meet me at my house. And I went, okay. And I met her at her house, and I had the experience of a lifetime. She qualified me. She wanted to know, why did I think I was an alcoholic? She wanted to know about my life. She wanted to know what happened when I drank. She wanted to know what happened when I didn't drink. She wanted to know who I was. Nobody ever asked me those kind of questions. And with tears streaming down my face, she identified with me, and it was my first experience with the language of the heart. She identified with a person like me. There are a lot of things that I am very embarrassed to talk about and won't from a podium. But you can imagine, we all earned our seats here from a variety of ways, right? So it started on a journey, and I met her, and she told me this, and she gave me this great big huge promise. She just said, listen, if you just do the things that we do, you will not believe the woman that you'll become. You'll knock your socks off. And I was like, is that possible? When I came here, I didn't have that vision. I was in a box of thought. I didn't know that if I followed the dictates of a higher power, I would have an amazing, wonderful life despite my circumstances. I didn't know that you would be here to walk me through my mom dying. I didn't know you'd be here to walk me through some real tragic experiences. You didn't walk me through a kidney transplant. You were here when I lost my house to the IRS. You were here when I had to face court battles that I didn't know how to face. You were Alcoholics Anonymous. showed up. And we have experience here. All you do is have to mention something, and somebody says, oh, I did that, or oh, I know somebody, or come on along with us. And suddenly, I'm surrounded by an enthusiasm I didn't know existed. It's almost like the underground, right? Like no one knows we're here, but we're here. So I start doing the deal, and I start showing up. And she made me deliver my box of self-help books because she said you help yourself too much. She gives me a big book and a 12 and 12, and she starts to teach me about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. She takes me to New York. She takes me to Riverside Chapel. She takes me to Stepping Stones. She takes me to the Wilson House, and she has me volunteer everywhere. I keep saying, I got three little kids. How can I do this? And she's like, people will come. Sure enough, they did. They showed up to take care of my kids while I learned what it was like to be of service. And I just learned how to be of service to you. I got this magnificent gift of me. I wouldn't have gotten it the other way around. I got that formula cooking, you know. It's like God, you, me, instead of me, me, me. And it took time and it took commitment to find out that I am on fire about my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a life that's unbelievable. So as we walked through, and my kids are older now, and I have 8 grandchildren now, they're all little boys, and I am really waiting for polka dots. That probably won't happen. But they're little guys. They're little guys, and I've never been adored before. And if you have grandchildren, you know exactly what I'm saying. These little kids look at me in a way that I have never been adored, and that must be how God thinks of us, how we look at him. I've never felt adored, and I feel adored by these little guys. And I feel treasured. I feel treasured by my family, something I didn't think would happen. And what it did is it took just this. It took saying, I am powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable. My life's unmanageable, but my emotions certainly are out of control. It took a step two that said, I have access to a power. I have access to a power that's going to bring me to a solution that I don't even know I need. And that power, that belief that that solution would come, took me to that third step where I was desiring to go through that fourth and fifth step experience, where I got to see me for who I am with alcohol and who I wanted to be. And I got to experience the tremendous 6 and 7 step changes where I got to change my whole attitude and outlook on life changed. And I got to experience me who I am, the person I was before alcohol entered my life, the person I was totally meant to be in relationship with you and in relationship with God. I got to be that. I got to be part of something. I always wanted to be part of something. At last, I that's probably the only line I identified with in Bill's story, being part of something. But now I really identify with that man. And I respect the fact that he had a vision for people like you and me, that we could stand here someday, years later, we could stand here and say, unbelievable, I am free. And I have a freedom of self in my life today that wasn't so when I met you 30 years ago. What did it take? It took me saying, okay, maybe I'll do that. Oh, God, they're asking me again. You know, and being honest about that attitude. You know, now I meet those women in my life or these guys in my life at my home group, and I said, you're going to be the booker, right? How do you say no to enthusiasm? If I say no to enthusiasm, I might just want to pick up that drink, and I don't want to pick up that drink. You know, it's really interesting that Caitlin picked up the ninth tradition, and in the ninth tradition, it tells us in there in the ninth tradition that if we don't embrace these 12 steps of recovery, we will have a certain death. We will face a certain death. That's not the death, a physical death, but it's absolutely a death of my spirit. And I am like the phoenix, you know, and I have risen from that with your help, with God's help. We become people that we didn't normally meet. There probably wouldn't have been a wink ever that I'd know some of you. I would have gone, please, right? Not a chance. But in today's world, that's not the story. In today's world, I get to be with you. I get to take you along with me. I get to do magnificent things. I get to travel around and be free. I get to go to meetings no matter where we're at. We get to go places. You know, last summer, where were we? It wasn't summer, it was March. Last March, we were at SVI. And while I was at SVI last March, I had left on Friday night. And I had a really bad experience with my dad. You know, to me, he belonged on this never in my lifetime on my planet list. You know that list you have to make amends? Well, we weren't making it there. And my sponsor said something magical happens when you put the names on a list, and eventually they move over, and eventually that amends was done. And I got in the call Friday before we went to Jamaica that he was transitioning. He'd been sick for about 2.5 years, and I'd been traveling back and forth from the Midwest and, you know, doing the deal the best I could do with this situation as it was. And my stepmother and I had become very close friends, which is a miracle in itself because I hated this woman. And we're walking this journey knowing that he's about to pass. And she called and we talked and she said, no, go anyway. You know, I know you want to be there. And it just so happened that on Wednesday of that week, he passed. And I was sitting at a table with a friend at lunch when I got that call. And I'm sitting with my friends from Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm sitting there and I'm going, thank God that amends was complete. And I saw a sunset that night as I'm talking on the phone. And I saw the sun rise and a big smile across the sky. And I'm thinking, you know, God is so good to give us the opportunity to make things right along the way. To be able to stand tall no matter what I've done, no matter where I've been, no matter who I did it with. To be able to say, hey, it's going to be okay. I love you anyway. And I love you with a depth of love that I didn't even know I had. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that. I thank the people that were here when I came to AA. And I certainly thank you for showing up tonight. Thank you so much for being here.